Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Odyssey NBA Insider Ryan McDonough Insider Calls brought to you by BetQL. Get access to data and insights the sportsbooks don't want you to see. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. Ryan, what's going on, man?
Gentlemen, good afternoon. It was a wild day in the NBA yesterday, and I'm glad to be on and break it all down with you guys.
Pleasure
so
to have you.
Thank you. Is the Philadelphia 76ers front office feeling today?
Boy, they're wondering what the heck happened. And they'll go back and watch the film, especially of the second half, with the Sixers blowing that 26-point lead. And, you know, the film will obviously tell you technically what happened, but then the other question, the more important question, is how did this happen? And how did we blow, for the second game in a row, a golden opportunity, guys? You guys remember game four, they had a lead in the second half as well. They melted down in that game in Atlanta. And then last night's collapse was catastrophic, you know, blowing a lead at home in a crucial game five of playoffs as the higher seed. That hasn't happened too many times in NBA history, especially with that that kind of lead. So they're doing a lot of soul searching today, but also, guys, trying to turn the page and move on, because they get game six coming up tomorrow night in Atlanta, and if they don't find a way to reverse this series quickly or gain momentum back in this series, then their season could be over tomorrow night.
Do you still lean, because I mean, you got Joel Embiid, you figure Tobias Harris has got to be better, not going to score four, and hopefully some kind of way you find a way to get Simmons off the line. Do you still lean towards Philly in this series, or after losing, to your point, blowing two big leads in a row, you think mentally they're dead? Which way would you lean if you said it right now?
Boy, this is a really tough one for me to peg. I think Philly has more talent and they have more experience, but offensively in particular, guys, the meltdowns, the just the different challenges. I mean, if you look at their fourth quarter numbers, especially with their three stars over the last couple games, they've been horrible. Embiid, Simmons, and Harris. Simmons really is in a mental funk right now. I mean, when you look at a guy shooting, I think, around 30% from the free throw line in the playoffs, that's the worst of all time, guys. He's actually shooting worse than guys like Shaq and Wilt Chamberlain, who are dominant big men who historically struggled at the line. So that's clearly become mental. He was 4-for-14 from the line last night. So I don't know. Like, my mind tells me the Sixers are the better team, and they should find a way to prevail, at least in Game 6, and force it to a Game 7 at home. But my gut tells me that something's off with the 76ers team, and then if it's close down the stretch, Nate McMillan and Trae Young and those guys will figure out a way to win the game, and unfortunately for Philly fans, the 76ers may figure out a way to blow the game, given what's happened over the last two contests.
Did you think Trae Young would be here this soon? I mean, your thoughts on what Trae would be when he got to the league and then sort of what he's become. I'll be real honest with you, Ryan. At one point, even earlier this season, I was questioning how much he affected winning. Nate McMillan's obviously been a great thing for him, but he's just finding different ways, like a veteran does, to win games. What have you thought about Trae Young's development?
It's been really impressive. And one of the concerns I had with him, guys, was on the defensive end.
Sure.
Would teams target him in the playoffs and kind of play him off the floor is the wrong term. That's too harsh. But really go at him and exploit him, just attack time after time. And the fact that teams haven't been able to do that, and that he's been so good offensively throughout his career, not just in this playoff run but in the regular season, but also that it's translated to the playoffs against two very good defensive teams, mm-hmm. The New York Knicks in round one and now the 76ers in round two, that's been really impressive to me. And that's been a trend around the league, guys. I mean, what in your backyard, John Morant did in round one against Utah, what out here in Phoenix, three guys we brought in when I was with the Suns, Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, and Mikal Bridges have done, and other young players around the league. You guys remember, it used to be where rookies, even older rookies, would come into the league, and the first time in the playoffs, they'd almost always take their lumps and struggle.
Yep.
That is not the case with this young generation of superstars, and that's why I think the league's in a great spot moving forward.
Of course,
We're talking to Odyssey NBA insider Ryan McDonough. These calls brought to you by BetQL here on the show. Bucks Nets tonight. Look, it's win or go home. Your season's over for the Milwaukee Bucks. What do you expect tonight? Do you expect to see sort of, you know, look, the Nets sort of left it all out there in Game 5. They came all the way back, and Kevin Durant played the full game, and James Harden effectively played the full game. Do you expect that sort of to catch up to the Nets tonight? What do you sort of have in terms of your expectations for this game tonight?
Yeah, I think the Bucks are going to come out swinging, right? They're on the ropes. It's an elimination game for them. You know, we heard the rumors even last year in the Orlando bubble about Mike Budenholzer, who's obviously done an excellent job, especially in the regular season over the course of the 3 years there. But now with the way that game ended and really, you know, flipped in the second half with Milwaukee blowing a 22-point lead and Brooklyn winning without Kyrie Irving and with a hobbled Kevin Durant, you know, so that pressure is real, guys. As much as you can say, you know, hey, we'll block it out. We're just focused on the Brooklyn Nets. If you're with the Bucks, you hear that and you sense that. The players sense it. The coaches in front office sense it. Like, look, if we don't at least compete against Brooklyn tonight and hopefully force this thing to a game seven, there are going to be a lot of changes around here on the court with the roster, but also maybe off the court as well. So I expect Milwaukee to come out swinging. My guess is they take an early lead. We'll see what Brooklyn has in the tank. I mean, it's rare in the playoffs, especially in a non-closeout scenario in a non-game seven, that a player would play 48 minutes. Kevin Durant did that the other night. He was obviously ungodly. But I'll be interested to see, you know, how he looks, what he has in the tank. He's so he moves so fluidly, guys, and so effortlessly that I think he'll still play well. The bigger question I have is, does James Harden look better? You know, because I think they won in spite of James Harden. He was terrific. I give him a lot of credit for what he tried to do, playing 46 minutes on a bad hamstring. His approach and resolve and toughness was terrific, but his performance was substandard. He was 1-for-10 with 4 turnovers. So the scary thing for Milwaukee is, okay, Brooklyn won basically with Durant doing that by himself. Now if Harden is a little bit closer to himself, and I bring this up, guys, because looking at the injury report from the league, he is not listed. James Harden is not listed in the injury report. My gut tells me that means he's a little bit healthier, which is a scary thing for the Milwaukee Bucks.
Does Giannis lack a killer instinct, Ryan? What it's funny to ask you this. If you're a front office that's done everything right, that you're trying to make him happy, and you've put more around him, you went out and got Drew Holiday. If I know you wouldn't say it to his face if you're the front office, because it's all about Giannis. But would you be disappointed in what you saw in terms of the last minute there? He gets a good pass, he fumbles it away. And just not having that sort of killer instinct that you certainly see from KD. Where are you at on Giannis? And would you have been disappointed in the performance? It's hard to say that because he's producing, right? But still, in the big moments, he seems to fade.
Yeah, I think he needs to continue to develop and evolve in his game, guys, especially with the shooting piece of it. One thing that surprised me a little bit, I would be disappointed in this one instance, is he said after Game 5 the other night when Brooklyn had the historic comeback and Milwaukee collapsed in the second half, he said after Game 5, I'd like to take the challenge of guarding Kevin Durant in Game 6. Mm. Well, why didn't you say that during Game 5? Yes. Kevin Durant's torching the Barclays Center for 49 points and 17 rebounds, 10 assists, one of the great performances of all time. I think the way, you know, most great players I've been around, whether it's Kevin Garnett or Paul Pierce or Devin Booker, whoever, said, look, give me the challenge, coach. You know, in the huddle, you're going to Mike Budenholzer saying, put me on that guy now.
Yes.
I don't care if it's part of the game plan or not. Put me on that guy now. I want the challenge. I want to stop this. We're not going to lose this way. It seems like Giannis didn't do that. He was guarding, you know, Joe Harris or Landry Shamet or somebody in the corner as Durant torched the Milwaukee Bucks. So yeah. I'd be concerned about that, guys, in the short term, but long term, he needs to get better as a shooter. I've said it time and time again to the point where I feel like I'm being repetitive, but I strongly feel this way. It's hard for teams to win in the playoffs if their best player can't make shots off the dribble and over the top of the defense. We saw it when LeBron James was young in Cleveland. LeBron obviously improved, and by the time he got to Miami and tweaked his shot a little bit, he was unguardable. That's the next step for Giannis. He has to be able to do that. You're not able to bull your way to the basket and the free throw line in crucial playoff games down the stretch against good opponents, and I think that's been somewhat of the Achilles heel for the Milwaukee Bucks in the playoffs over the past couple of years.
So obviously, sort of to localize that, someday that is going to be a conversation that is had in Memphis. Now, John Morant had one of the best playoff debuts you'll ever see. Historically, it just was. Do you think that going to be a conversation for Ja? Do you trust that he'll be able to sort of figure that out in time? How do you think that applies to the Memphis Grizzlies?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, that has to be the next step in John Morant's development. He's obviously a spectacular player. He's got everything you'd want, physically, mentally, you know, feel for the game, flair for the game, getting teammates involved, all that. But he needs to be at least a league average shooter from the perimeter, because as you guys saw in the Utah series, that's what teams are going to allow him to do, right? They're going to take away transition and try to take away his ability to get to the basket. It's not easy to do that because he's going to be a superstar, but that's what teams are going to try to do. So, you know, if you know that, you prepare for that. LeBron James is one who prepared for it and then, you know, went to an all-world level by the time he figured out how to become a consistent three-point shooter. So that's the next step in the evolution, I think, for Giannis and Ja Morant. If I'm a Grizzlies fan, though, I'm not as worried about it because Ja's younger. He just finished his second year. Right. Giannis has been in the league for a while now, guys. He was in the 2013 draft. So if you're the Bucks, especially if they lose tonight and their season's over, you need to see that development from Giannis. I think Ja has a little bit of time, and I think given his character, work ethic approach, Ja Morant will get better as a perimeter shooter.
Ryan, you know this team so well. Is it Phoenix's Western Conference title to lose at this point when you look at the injuries to other teams? Utah, I will say, I mean, they've been playing phenomenally, but Donovan Mitchell's ankle is a question. How much do you like Phoenix to make the finals overall?
Yeah, I think Phoenix should be considered the title favorite, or excuse me, the favorite to get to the finals coming out of the Western Conference at this point. Both teams are banged up. The wild card guys, what we're all waiting to see is Kawhi Leonard and his health and his status. Clippers had a huge win last night in Game 5 in Salt Lake City to take a 3-2 lead. And the Clippers actually match up pretty well with the Suns from a Clippers perspective. That was an opponent Phoenix, despite their terrific regular season, had some troubles with during the year. The Suns matched up very well with the Utah Jazz, even when the Jazz were at full strength with Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell. So I think it'll be an LA Clippers, Phoenix Suns Western Conference final. I think if Kawhi is not able to play or if he's limited, I'd lean pretty strongly in favor of the Suns. We'll see what happens with Chris Paul. But I put this on Twitter last night, guys. I think even without a best player, one of the top players in each team, if Kawhi Leonard's out for the Clippers or Mike Conley's out for Utah and Chris Paul are out for Phoenix, I think that plays to Phoenix's favor because I think they have more depth and more high-end talent. So I like the Suns to potentially come out of the West, but the wild card is if the Clippers do advance and then Kawhi Leonard is healthy for the Western Conference Finals.
We're talking to Odyssey NBA insider Ryan McDonough here on the show. Insider Calls brought to you by BetQL. Get access to data insights the sportsbooks don't want you to have. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. We saw LeBron James say his piece last night about the injuries, and we all know, we all see they have piled up as of late here in the NBA. But, I mean, isn't this, at the end of the day, and I understand where he's coming from, it is a bummer that we are in the playoffs and Kawhi's not playing and Anthony Davis was banged up, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, it's a money question at the end of the day, isn't it, Ryan? Because if it was such a concern, well, just it's very simple. Agree to less money for a shorter season. Right, because that would improve the product. Guys wouldn't have to worry about getting hurt as much. But nobody's going to agree to less money, are they?
No, and that's where I think it's hypocritical of LeBron James to say that or put that out there publicly. As you guys know, nobody's voice carries more weight in the NBA than LeBron James. Nobody, other than maybe Adam Silver. LeBron's probably the second most influential person in the NBA, in the face of the league in a lot of ways. So for him, who, again, keep in mind, guys, he was a recent vice president of the Players Association, and one of his best friends is Chris Paul, who's the current head of the Players Association. For LeBron to say, well, they didn't listen to me, I didn't have a voice, I don't buy that. Look, I mean, the NBA and the Players Association had a number of options. None of them were good, right? One of them would have been, as you mentioned, playing fewer games and taking less money. They didn't do that. In fact, they found a way to bridge that gap nicely with getting, basically the full amount of money, especially from the media contracts, but only playing 72 games instead of 82. And then, trying to space out the season as best they could. It wasn't ideal for anybody. We figured there would be more injuries, but what else would the league do, right? If they went the other way and said, okay, let's only play 42 games instead of 72, then I think a lot of players would be complaining about that, right? That they only got half their salary, whatever. So, I think it's convenient for LeBron. I understand why he's upset, and nobody wants to see players get injured, but I don't know what the league should have reasonably done during a pandemic coming off a season that ended in mid-October last year if they wanted to preserve the business model and the long-term future of the NBA.
And then, Ryan, if you're looking at New Orleans' situation, Did you see it? Is it a coaching issue? Is it a roster issue? Why was that team, right, which didn't have the excuses, frankly, that the Grizzlies did, who, you know, played in the majority of the season without Jaren Jackson Jr., why is that team, why did it underachieve in the way that it did, and how do you fix it?
Yeah, I think there are a number of issues, guys. I mean, obviously, the front office felt that Stan Van Gundy was not the right man for the job, and that's something that obviously doesn't reflect well if you're in the front office
exactly.
of New Orleans and Indiana. They're both in the same situation where they hired Stan Van Gundy and Ape Bjorkgren in the last 8 or 9 months, and you know it's rare that a coach who's hired by a current front office coaches one season on a multi-year deal and then is out. So there's certainly pressure on those two front offices between New Orleans and Indiana. So I think you know there's some obviously issues there, relationship issues between the coaching staff and the players in New Orleans, but also the roster guys, you know, some of the veterans they brought in, Eric Bledsoe, who they got in the Jrue Holiday trade, struggled.
Yep.
Steven Adams, who they traded for and extended from OKC, really struggled as well. So the results did not match the talent on the roster. I guess somebody had to pay the price for that, and that was Stan Van Gundy. It's, as you guys know, it's an unfair business, but
right.
And there's a reason why only 6 of the 30 coaches in the NBA have been on the job since prior to 2018. Guys, that's only 3 years ago, and think about it that way. 24 of the 30 head coaching jobs have turned over. So any of your listeners, young men and women who want to be head coach in the NBA, just keep that in mind and make sure they rent, don't buy, because it's not a job that comes with a lot of stability.
And then Ryan, I'm going to ask you, because one of the things that I've sort of pounded my fist on the table for the Grizz, they're picking currently at 17, and I'm sure there will be some good players available at 17, but I really am of the mind that, and I think the playoffs prove that, you cannot ever have too much shooting. So just because you found Desmond Bane last year doesn't mean you shouldn't draft another shooter if you can in this particular draft. So my big idea has been trading up a couple spots and going to get the Gonzaga shooter, Corey Kispert. What do you make of that? Do you like Kispert as a prospect? And do you like the idea of the Grizzlies trading up to get him?
Yeah, I think I'm kind of neutral on Kispert as a prospect. He brings a shooting ability. I haven't seen a whole lot of other versatility from his game. Could he play a Doug McDermott role or something like that, a valuable knockdown shooter who's limited in other areas? I think he probably could. But as you mentioned, ever since Zach Kleiman and his group took over in the front office, they've done a really good job with their personnel in the draft. You know, obviously, the Morant with the second pick was relatively easy, but some of the later picks they've really nailed with Desmond Bane. Even Xavier Tillman, you know, some of the other ones they've had as well later in the first round have really panned out, or in the second round have panned out as well. So at 17, I think they'll be opportunistic. Most of the executives I talked to around the league think there's a pretty significant drop-off kind of once you get past that top lottery group. There are 5 elite prospects, and then from, you know, about 6 on down, it's a gap. So I think there may be some opportunities for Memphis to move up. I don't think they'll be able to jump from 17 and into the top 5 to get to one of those elite young players, but you mentioned the importance of shooting, and when your best player, Ja Morant, is an elite athlete and a playmaker but struggles at times, at least in his young career, with a shot, then I think that becomes more important, and I agree with the general sentiment. I think the front office will continue to target shooters around the great Ja Morant.
Hey, Ryan, man, great
Love
stuff
your
as
insight,
always.
Man. Thank
Appreciate
you, Ryan.
The time as always.
Always great to be on with you guys.